Dismantled, a podcast inciting curiosity, inspiring truth, and modeling deliberate space-taking on personal, social, and historical issues for people of the sun, the displaced diaspora, lifting love, discourse, solidarity, and liberation.
Welcome, everyone, to our Latinx episode. We want to shout you all out for listening to us these past few times. We're really excited to be here today. We're going to lighten up the mood today and talk a little bit about dating. Might be funny, might not be funny. We don't know yet. But yes, we want to welcome you all. I'm Cynthia.
Maria Cristina.
And we have an amazing guest facilitator with us today. Gomez, will you please tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes. So my name is Gomez Arteaga. I'm two-spirit, aligning myself to who I've been and I've been probably resisting for a long time. And I'm from Chicago, born and raised in Chicago, but my parents are immigrants from Mexico. My dad was a farm worker and then a steel mill worker. My mom was also an obrera and did a lot of domestic work. And so I'm here through their experience, so... very happy to be here.
Welcome.
Welcome so much, Gomez. That was beautiful. Shouting out to your legacy. So yeah, we're going to go ahead and start with our calling for today. I don't know. I know, Gomez, I can go first, but Gomez, I know you had prepared some to read a little something. Did you want to read it right now?
I think I'll hold off.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll hold off.
All right.
Yeah.
So in terms of calling, today I'm going to call my mom because I was recently cracking up about her. For all of you who listen to the podcast, my mama is an 85-year-old spunky lady. And we were at Nordstrom Rack, one of her favorite haunts. And there is she now has to either walk with a cane or she always has to have a cart, you know, a carrito, so that she can like free flow through the stores and do whatever the hell she likes to do in the stores. And this time I was next to her and this white man just totally kind of bumped into her cart and her and kind of like threw her off course and didn't say excuse me. And she just kind of stood there and stared. And then so then I said, excuse me, like that. And he just turned around and half smirked at us and kept walking. So then my mom postured like she was going to run him over with her cart. So she was like pretending to like run him over and like, you know, kind of like taunting him like that, like you would with like your car or something at somebody. And it was just funny. And I was telling a few of my friends and they're like, that's where you get it from, Sin. That's who you get it from. So I want to shout out my mom's energy because she always has a lot of energy and she likes it to be positive and funny. And so her energy's here. Yes. Yeah.
Welcome. Yeah. The energy.
¿Cómo yeah. se llama tu mami?
Blanca Rosa Martínez Rosales Anzueto Sical.
Oh, no, you have told us her name before.
Yeah.
Blanca.
Doña
Blanca.
Yeah, yeah. Or as Blanca my friend Rosa. Calls her, white.
No. Okay.
Yeah. Maria, would you like to go or Gomez?
I'll go. Yeah. Okay. So you know, I was thinking a lot about the subject we're going to talk about today, and I really want to bring in the spirit and essence and thoughts and words of Audre Lorde. She is an amazing queer feminist writer, poet, documenter of her life, and I particularly want to bring into the space her knowledge and groundbreaking work around the use of the personal being political and the use of the erotic. And how women and in general people of color have been eroticized and how we take our power back.
Mm-hmm.
So, as we talk about relationships.
Yes. Nice. I like it. I like it.
Yeah. Well, Gomez, you've inspired me. And I, when I heard you were going to bring in the energy of Audre, I immediately had this thing in my memory that... last time I was in Puerto Rico, I went into this like obsessive search for books of a poet from Puerto Rico, and her name is Angela Maria Davila, and that's her artist name. And She's an Afro-Puerto Rican poet that, like, it. She's not odd. She's it's poetry, and she's from the time of the 60s and like the cafes and poetry and but there she speaks about the senses and about the erotic and about women's experience and especially Afro-Caribbean, like Afro-Caribeñas, and there was something about what you said, you know, about the personal and the political, and then it kind of said yes, and also like the beauty and the poetry that there is as well in just relationships and who we are in the world, and I don't know, it just like you inspired me into her and bringing her energy into my awareness, so I just want to bring that energy in here too.
Beautiful. So her name is
Ángela María Dávila.
Ángela María Dávila and Audre Lorde, and I'll just shorten her name, Blanca Rosa Martinez. So we have some very strong women, queer women, Afro-Latina, just women, two spirits in the room today with us. So thank you both. Next, we usually go into our moment of victory. And, you know, I had thought of one moment of victory, and then, to be honest with you both, I forgot about it. I don't know it now. I'm going to be super cheesy and corny and just shout out the Warriors for their teamwork. For their moment of victory, I've got to say I am from the Bay Area. I went to my first Warriors game. I think I was 18 years old. Whoa. And I remember I went with my girl Denise Elia Alomar and her brother Ivan and an ex-boyfriend who shall not be named. And it was my first time in a game. Tim Hardaway, Chris Mullin. And then after that, you know, there's like Chris Webber, Latrell Sprewell, so many players that I've kept up with. And it's just really exciting to see Oakland and how wonderful the community is out here, because you don't see the beauty of Oakland a lot of times on the news. Mm-hmm. And I've been seeing some video that folks were posting on Facebook, people dancing on the streets, lots of POC.
Kevin Durant getting out of his car and dancing with people on the street.
Yes, so dancing and like having his mom there, and just the spirit of POC in a city that's often vilified and looked at as super violent. And I was just waiting for those stories to come out. But you know, it just filled my heart with joy. I did watch the championship game, and I was in Oakland, and then we all went downtown with my friends. And so I just want to, you know, say that I'm really excited that Oakland gets to have another championship, and that families and just folks come out and just celebrate and have a little bit of respite from all the hardship in the world.
And they unanimously denied the invitation to go to the White House. Though,
yes.
Right?
Like, yes.
They were like, no, thank you.
Yes. I was watching an announcer on ESPN and he broke it down. He said, you know, I don't really envision this team.
I like
it. I might have been him. He was saying, you know, I highly doubt that they'll go. This is a team from Oakland, not Golden State, Oakland. And this is the home of the Black Panthers. And there's a lot of, he said there's no racism here. I don't know about that, but.
It wasn't him.
Yeah. But he said, he did say, you know, racism is not tolerated. Mm. People love Mexicans in our community of Oakland. We're a history of Black Panthers. We have organizing. So no, I don't think that they will go. So that it's kind of cool that Oakland's being talked about in that way. And that people are hearing about it.
Well, that's a big victory.
Yes, that's a victory. Who would like to go next?
Well, I mean, I think that day was also the anniversary of the 49 people who were killed, both young and elders, in Orlando.
Yes.
And so, in a sense, keeping their names and their legacy alive is a victory, right? And so we got to, like, change a tragedy into a victory in some ways. And so it was beautiful to see people celebrating the Warriors, particularly the symbolism of people of color, really, mm-hmm. is what it is. That's the few times in our society when we glorify people of color.
Yes.
Think about it, you know?
Yeah.
And so to kind of juxtapose that with the fact that we were remembering these four people who were, and as it ties to our theme tonight or today, about love and the freedom to love and what does that look like, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how it looks as long as you're living that path of love, right?
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. So anyway,
that's the moment of victory to me.
Thank you, Gomez. Bringing the depth today. Maria?
Well, I think the moment of victory for me is that we are here recording this podcast today.
Yes.
I think it's not evident to the listeners, but we worked to get here today. Mm. You know, we had another day scheduled, we couldn't meet and for different reasons, and here we are, and with all the bumps and like stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, it's one of those things that I appreciate about sitting together with just all of you, that it shifts. The moment we just start and we turn that mic on, we're here, and it feels victorious.
So, I love that you said that, Maria. Thank you so much. Thank you for bringing the mic, because sometimes, you know, it can be something as little as you feel like as little as a mic, but the mic is huge. Right. We need our mic, and, you know, we have busy lives, so we're coming together here, hopefully, to bring a little, like, I don't know, comfort, excitement, funnies, anger, whatever it is that you're feeling, we're here for it. I wanted to shout out my friend and hairstylist, Mireia, who works at Manifest the Salon, because she listens to us every time we have a podcast. And she told me, you know, sometimes, Cynthia, just the intros, the callings, and the moments of victory, that's all I have time to listen to. But it gets me through my morning commute, and I get to work, and it just fills me with you know, some joy and some energy. So I just want to shout her out, because she's listened to all of our podcasts. So we appreciate all of you.
Yes.
We appreciate you all.
And I'm a fan, too. I've been a listener. So it's a special privilege to be behind the scenes. I gotta say.
Yes.
That is another victory.
Yes, Gomez is here for our pre-podcast convivir juntas and all that. Yeah. So today, folks, we want to talk about dating. And dating means many different things to many different people. And we kind of thought, like, it would be something good to bring to lighten up the mood, but also because, you know, dating per se, I mean, even culturally, I don't even know, like, you know, I didn't grow up with the notion of dating, right? Mm-hmm. So I hope that we even, like, get to think about that today. Mm-hmm. But, you know, dating culture is everywhere, all over the media, all over capitalism.
And it's evolving.
Yes. And now we have apps, and we have meetups, and we, you know,
I feel people are more disconnected now than ever.
Yeah.
I mean, but do we even have a Spanish word for dating?
Yeah, that's a great point. No.
Do we?
No.
Noviazgo?
Noviazgo.
Yeah. Is that dating?
O tu pretendiente.
You know?
I don't
know. That's like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Que te tira piropos.
¿Cómo se llama tu... ojo de taco? Taco de ojo, whatever it's called. It's
like the Mexicanos use. Yeah. That's cute. Yeah. And it's very gendered.
Oh, incredibly.
Super gendered.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I remember growing up and I was like... Either you have a novio or a novia, right? Or
uh-huh.
But like dating, that's like that. I definitely did not grow up.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it's not talked about because oftentimes you're dating multiple people.
Yeah. Like going. Yeah. Like
yeah.
Going out, right? Or
yeah.
Like you're meet. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so women don't talk about that, but men talk about it amongst themselves.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And culturally, though, the
but women do
dynamic,
talk about it.
Yes. That's what I was about to say. Like,
mm-hmm.
We are getting to that point, you know, where through the movement of the queer movement, through the movement of a POC feminism, we're moving towards this new day and age where we're thinking about how our bodies, claiming our bodies, reclaiming our bodies in many ways, and sort of trying to decolonialize this mentality of you know, specifically, and I say women because historically that's how it's been written about, how we've been treated as property. Mm. And really the notion of dating is probably a 20th century kind of idea, I think. I don't know, folks, I didn't look it up in the history.
But no, it is.
Yeah. To date.
For women.
Right.
In particular.
Because before it was like you had a dowry, you bought both your dowries, you married for whatever reason, land or whatever, and that's how you kind of came together. But the idea of dating different people to choose a mate, to find love.
To find love.
It's a new construct. It is.
It is. It's a construct. And at the same time, it's been claimed by capitalism. And so a lot of us have to do work on, like, what is dating for us? Like, well, first of all, I think, you know, as intersectional people, as POC folks, do we date?
I've dated a lot. I gotta say. All the rainbow. I mean, I don't know. I think at first there was I think for me, as someone who is a survivor of trauma, as many of us are, I think it's merging that finding what you really want and need and marrying that with expectations that may or may not exist in a particular person.
Yeah.
So timing is a huge thing for me also. Yeah.
The fantasy is usually better than the reality, I find. I don't know how you all feel, but I think that... I'm totally a kid who grew up going to the Mission Public Library. Shout out to the Mission Public Library. And I grew up reading, you know, Jane Austen, Bronte.
You're so my twin sister, yo.
Yeah, man. And, like, that kind of fucked me up, like, in terms of what relationships are. And then, you know, hearing these fairy tales about what it was. And also... I'm sorry, but in my household, there was no novio or dating in middle school or high school.
No.
That was like, oh, no, you're not going to do that. You got to go to college. And that, you know. So my mom always says, cuando se calienta esta, and she points to the crotch area, esta no piensa, which is the brain. So, like, she's...
So true.
Right? So it's like, you know, kind of that sort of cultural... thing of, like, me being a girl and sort of being very protective around that, right? So I feel like dating is a very Americanized...
But let's go back to before dating.
Yeah.
And did your parents talk to you about sex in general? No.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
For me, it was like, no meta la pata.
Yeah, that's what my mom said that too.
You know what I mean?
No meta la pata. Don't be putting that foot in there, because if you do, you know, I mean, yeah.
No, I mean, I'm kind of trying to think about my own upbringing, and, you know, it's so interesting because I don't have memories of very clear and, like, direct messages around dating, around marriage, around, like, relationships, like, romantic relationships. I have very clear memories and very direct messages around what I needed to... Like, I needed to study, and I needed to go to school, and I needed to get an education, and, like, those were the very clear messages. But then, not because they weren't direct, doesn't mean they weren't there.
Exactly.
You know, so then, like, there's this, like, murky, confusing process for me to figure out then what actually were the messages that I was getting, because it was not what was being talked about.
Decode stuff.
Yeah, like there's for sure a lot of implicit and coded stuff that I can think about my maternal grandmother and feel like a lot more permissive around what's allowed in that side of the family, and then think about my paternal grandmother, like where she never met any of my partners or boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Like, she passed away, and I never introduced her to any of my and I've had plenty of partners that I've lived with. You know, but my other grandmother knew all of them and knew that I lived with them. And, like, you know, like, I remember when I moved to San Francisco, I moved with one of my partners at the time, and my grandmother, like, she knew. And she said, oh, that's so good that she's not alone there.
Yeah, like, that's great.
But again, like, was that also a coded message? Right? Like when you're right. with someone, you're not alone.
Right.
Right? But that's...
But what if you would have been alone?
I know. What if I had, you know?
Yeah.
But then, like, there was not a charge around, oh, no, they're, like, she's not married and she's not leaving and she's living with someone. But, you know, but then I didn't tell my other grandmother. It's just, like, a lot of, like, I'm going off on... things that I actually have not created very clear narratives about what they meant, you know.
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, Maria, I remember you talking about how your mom, you know, in some ways you grew up with a very strong present mom, right? And so that in many ways influenced how you thought of relationships or what. And I think I've mentioned too in the past where my parents never pressured me to have children, to get pregnant, or to get married. So my narratives are also pretty murky, and I've kind of found a way to like piece together a narrative through friends, through the media, through reading, and through my own needs. But it's not like, you know, at times I feel kind of, I don't want to say ambivalent, but there's also the issue of like religion, you know, and how I was raised Catholic and what, you know, all these horrible, you know, super patriarchal messages that you get as a cisgender woman who's like, you know, you're not supposed to have sex before blah, blah, blah. And here we are in this world where you're like, but I'm in college and I'm not at home, and or my friends are in high school, or, you know, people are having sex
and
in high
school.
Your body is going through all this, like, sort of like making you feel bad for exactly Gomez, normal things happening in your body. Right. Yes. So, so I think the answer is we date. It may not look like what you see on television or what you read about in the novels, but we do date. Somehow we find partners. I mean, Maria, you have a partner, and somehow you came to a partner, right? So you guys went on a few dates, I'm assuming, before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how did you know he or she was the one?
The thing is, I don't even know if I have that idea of the one. You know, like, I don't
that narrative
but
around
that
the
feeling,
one.
You have a feeling.
Oh, a feeling that I wanted to be with him. How did I know? Well, yeah, I mean, I could start the story way back. We met actually before we dated, and we definitely felt a strong attraction to each other. Mm. And years went by where we didn't see each other, and then we reconnected, and that was still there. So, I mean, but the thing about dating too is that I have not, you know, when you first suggested the theme, I was like, I don't know, because I don't date. I've been in a relationship for 6 years. I don't have the experience. I feel like also 6 years ago, dating was
different.
So different than the way it is right now.
And if you think about it, it's not that long, but it's changed a lot.
It's changed a
with
lot.
With the apps.
Yes. Well, it's capitalism coming into relationships.
Yeah.
And it's also San Francisco and like
culture.
Tech
right.
and like culture, the culture of like the internet. The
and
apps
the culture
and
of working like hella hours. You don't have time to be courted or do courts.
Yes.
To be honest. And I think about also just like what you all mentioned earlier, such a deviation from what our moms and our grandmothers went through in terms of expectation. All of us had the expectation of going to school.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And all of us probably went to school, right?
Yeah.
And so I just think how different is that in terms of shaping our worldview, in terms of even partnering or dating or even just having sex, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's so different.
Yeah.
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 I mean, and I think for me, when I went to the University of Puerto Rico, that I started to take courses with all, you know, like these professors that were calling themselves feminists and like, you know, and like hearing about Audre Lorde and like reading all these things like that also then started to shape my own sense of like, how do I want to be in a relationship, right? Like, there were like all these implicit messages around, I think, being in company of, right? Like partnership was like being in company of. But then when I start to then think about in the university, like, well, there's more to that too. Like, there's about what you want and like about empowerment and like redefining relationships, decolonial, like these ideas about sex, about the erotic, right? Like listening to poetry, like listening to music, you know, like all these things that also shape, you know, like so many ways in which I think I have constructed relationships. And like, you know, like I never thought about getting married ever.
I thought about it, but I never thought of children or what it actually meant to be married or a wedding.
So funny. I never thought about that. As a queer person, right? And now as like two-spirit identified, I grew up with that fairy tale too.
Yeah.
I wanted a partner. Yeah. And here I am in the 12-year, kind of, well, 11 and a half, because we've been kind of, you know, in and out the last few months. But it's interesting because it is a falseness that you kind of, and this expectation of, I mean, I feel like relationships, you're walking a path with someone, right? And you're either walking the path in a particular way, or you're growing, or you're deviating apart. I don't know. Timing is everything.
I agree.
Like with you and your partner, right? Yeah. Years before, you probably wouldn't have been able to have that relationship that you are now having when you first had that interaction that you knew was that chemical kind of connection with your partner, right?
Yeah, when you, well, so let's think, so there's a few things that are coming up. I know that we had some questions that we were thinking about. Like, for example, is there like, well, first of all, dating in the Bay Area in and of itself is like something that should be studied, I think. Just because, I mean, I had a question of like, is dating straight and dating in the queer communities different, right? But really just even dating in the Bay Area is just this whole little world, its microcosm of, of, you know, just meeting people that have dated people you know, figuring out that you know. I mean, is it different? Is it the same? I think it's different here. I think it's hard. Straight dating, by the way, I'm single and ready to mingle. I think straight dating for me as a cisgender, you know, femme woman, right? Straight dating, meeting men is just really hard. It's been really hard. I've been single for 3.5 years now, and it's just hard, man. It actually makes me not want to leave the house.
I mean, I hear that.
Yeah.
From all of my friends that are dating.
Yeah. It's hard. So is it...
So what is hard about it?
Well, this is the one thing. I keep hearing the word connection, and I agree. You have to feel connected to someone, right? So... Do y'all believe in chemistry, though?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And is chemistry purely... No, I shouldn't say purely. Is chemistry... Does it also have to do with sexual energy?
No.
No.
It could be. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the relationship is that bond, right? But I don't know. For me, I think as an older person, what I've come to find out is that if you don't have that balance between spiritual, mental, like, stimulation, not just the physical, because the physical...
Well, like my mom says, after 7 years, it's gone, mija. You want to make sure you're married to your best friend. Because, she's like, you want to make sure you're married. She also, this is a woman who also believes in you should live with your partner before you marry.
Oh, interesting.
Because, you know.
I agree with that.
Yeah, and I mean, she is 85 from Guatemala, so it's not like she's, you know, a new agey parent from Berkeley. She's, you know, she's an immigrant, and she's grown a lot, and she says it, immigrating to, you know, the San Francisco in the 60s. But, you know, she believes that. But she says, you know, after 7 years, mija, you know, a lot of the passion is no longer new, and for some couples it's more difficult, but for others who are best friends, you figure out ways throughout the years to come to fall in and out of love, and that's partnership and commitment and friendship. You know, so you know, I don't want to out this person. I don't even think they listen to our podcast, but like one of the things that really gets on my nerves is the last dude that I dated, and I wouldn't even call it dating because we like never even touched, but we hung out. Very nice person. And I'm the kind of person where I need to touch somebody and see if there's like a connection in that sense for me to even know that there's chemistry, because there is going to, like with this person, there was definitely a connection in terms of point of reference. Right. But I need to touch somebody also.
What do you mean by point of reference?
Like, we like the same music. Okay. We have similar politics. Okay. We're POC, And so in that sense, it was, exactly, right? But I mean, my biggest pet peeve is I hate it when men will say things like, you're the woman of my dreams, but there's just no chemistry, so we can't date. And that was what this last person said to me. And I felt like saying, you know, motherfucker, like, don't give me that shit. I am not the woman of your dreams. Just be upfront and say, like,
you had there's chemistry, no... but there he was referring to something else.
I don't know even what he was referring to, and I never got a chance to ask him. I thought about it, and I was like, I don't want to waste any energy on this. It's cool, you know, but I feel like chemistry comes from, like, you know, if you're talking to someone for many, many hours and talking about intimate details of your life, that's a level of intimacy and chemistry.
And bonding.
And bonding. For this person, it wasn't that. And to for someone to say to you, like, and I'm putting hell in my business out there, but I don't give a shit. This person doesn't listen. It's Maria's sitting here laughing. It's just kind of like a cop-out, I think. Just be real. Like, you don't need to tell me I'm the woman of your dreams and in the same breath tell me, but I don't want to date you. Like, it's kind of weird, right? Just be, like, honest.
What you're talking makes me think, too, about something that I see a lot and I hear a lot, and it's like, it's not exactly what you're saying, but it's making me think about the games that people play.
Like people's narratives.
Yeah, and like also like, you know, the person did this, so that means that. Like, you have to kind of interpret the signs and, like, you know, like, you know, like what the text means and like all these things. But there is like also an inherent, like, not like a straight communication, like direct, like saying, like, hey, I want to go out with you.
Maybe
I'm old school, but I'm one of a person that I'm like, if I feel you, I'm gonna tell you I feel you. I'm not one of
so that's not playing games, right?
Like, that's not playing games.
Well, I don't know, because I feel like sometimes you play games within your own self about, like, what you struggle with and what you want to be upfront about, right?
So for everyone has, like, a struggle.
Well, we all have our story. And sometimes we stick to that story. So, like, our story is stronger than what we're trying to create with this person. And so it kind of, like, how do you untangle from that story?
Right.
To be able to have a story together.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's harder as you get older. I really feel that. I mean, as an older person, sometimes it definitely comes into, like, relationships and how, you know, when you're in your 20s, I feel like people are more malleable and you kind of, like, can have this opportunity. I know people who came together in their 20s and they divorced, and others that, like, stayed together, you know, and, like, grew together. So
who are those people that stayed together?
But you know what I'm saying? Like, it just depends. But I think that I think games are a big thing. Like, one of my male friends, because, you know, I hadn't dated a lot recently, so then when I did, it came as a shock to be talked to in that way, in such a gendered kind of, like, I'm deciding whether this goes forward, and I'm not into it, so, you know, I mean, that's not how they put it, but it was, like, kind of like, well, I don't feel chemistry, so peace out, you know what I'm saying? But, like, my friend who's male was like, well, Sin, what the hell are you doing being so available? You gotta play the game at least a little bit, you can't, and here I'm like, I feel like this is where the gender dynamics come in, because my friends who are also cisgender female women were like, you know, Sin, you know, put yourself out there, be vulnerable, be available, you know. And then I have my male friend like, what the hell were you thinking, Sin? Like, why were you so available, you know? And, you know, it just makes me laugh, because, so that's why I was also curious, like, in communities, it's different to date, you know. Do you get those messages, Gomez? Do you get those messages?
I don't know. I gotta think about it. I mean, I feel like I'm a person that wears my heart on my sleeve a lot of the time. So for me, it's not like an issue of, I think most of the time I'm wondering, okay, does this person really like me? Because their actions might not be congruous with what has actually been told. But I think those situations come up. I think there's just layers to a difference in how you maybe express connection and emotion. But I feel love in its essence is the same. And that connection in its essence is the same. Because I would say, even though I'm queer, like, I feel like I'm more, like, I vibe with people's energy, not so much their gender or how they look or whatever, right? I mean, that's just how I be. So, and I feel in the queer community, there's more of a flexibility for that.
Which is beautiful.
When I see it even more so, because I feel like maybe my generation and maybe the generation that came before me were much more rigid in their gender, right? Where I feel the younger generation is just more fluid in what they feel they can express or not express, and choose to love in a way they feel comfortable loving outside of whatever demands are there in society to have particular things or not.
Yeah.
But I think that's also a kind of a cutting edge sword, because then you have all this like informality then too.
Got you.
So where people are just wondering, are we dating or are we not? Like, we're just kicking it.
Yeah.
And we're just hanging out.
Yeah.
But what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I've known people that have been kicking it or hanging out for like years.
So, you know, I hear you.
And it's different in the male gay community as it would be in, you know, queer women's spaces or trans spaces. So I feel it's just, for me, I've always just kind of like, do unto others as you would want to do be done to you. Just be like, I wouldn't want to, you know, feel particular ways or whatever. And I just try to live those values in my relationship. That's hard sometimes because you don't know where people are coming and people have different types of associations and traumas that lend you to, you know, to react a particular way. So it's oftentimes it's decoding and deconstructing what that looks like.
So let's get down to specifics though, ladies. Do y'all date white folks?
I have in the past and I have a rule not to anymore.
Where did that rule come from, Gomez?
I'm dating someone who came over in the Mayflower.
Oh, wow. So they said they could trace their lineage to the Mayflower.
Wow.
Yeah. That's, I mean, that's really scary.
That's really cool.
That is
and being in their home.
Talk about get out.
Yeah. I was in that sunken place.
You were in the sunken place. Oh, no.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah.
Very weird.
So what didn't sit well with you? I mean, were they politicized? Were they like...
She was politicized. Okay. I think it's interesting. I think I see a lot of younger white people kind of that come from those backgrounds that want to connect and associate with a more leftist-leaning, progressive view of stuff, but they rely so much on that economic in biblical court.
It's also the Bay Area too, I think.
Yeah. Although this person was from Connecticut.
Oh, okay. Yeah. From Connecticut. Mm-hmm. Okay. 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 So the rule is now no.
No.
Okay. No. Maria?
Well, I mean, my partner, he's Albanian. Which...
Ethnic white.
Yeah. So they, you know, he passes as white. And at the same time, where the place where we really bonded was on that migrating experience and what it is.
Because he wasn't born in the States.
No, he was not born here. He immigrated here, and it's like he moves through the world through his immigrant identity, and also like Albanian culture, you know, even though it's in Europe, there. It's so much of it that it's not entrenched in whiteness as we know, and like white supremacy as we know it. And so there's a collective aspect of Albanian culture that really resonates a lot with the way that I also was raised and grew up. And before that, I always said I would never date a white person.
Right.
You know, and...
And had you dated white people?
No. This is the first dated a white person in my life.
And which is interesting because I think when I say white person, and that's my thing, you know...
I'm American.
I think of like a person from the United States. Yeah. Yes.
So I have never dated or been with a white man. Mm-hmm. I mean, now for me too, the thing is that I also, before that, I never dated anyone that didn't speak Spanish.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And my partner now speaks and understands, but, you know, we don't relate in Spanish. Mm-hmm. Like, our relationship is
this English. The first guy that you just relate to in English?
Wow, that's a trip.
That's a trip.
So that's also another piece.
Don't you miss, the words in Spanish?
I do, yeah.
And las caricias, say them, los palabritas ahí, you know?
No, I do say them, you know, but it's... You know, like, there's, for me, like, relationships and, like, what makes me really feel very attracted to people, it's, like, also the intellectual
connection. Oh, yeah, and he's like, right there with you.
Yeah. But then, like, I don't have that in Spanish with him, right? So for me to have that connection with him, it has to be in English. I cannot have, like, these very deep conversations with him in Spanish like I've had in the past with other partners.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Do you miss that?
I do sometimes,
I'm sure he misses it too, right?
It does, for sure. Yeah. And this is something that we talk about because our relationship is like, it's one that exists in spaces that inevitably leave out parts of ourselves.
Right.
You know, like when you are dating cross-culturally, you know, there's like inevitably things mm-hmm. that are not going to be able, you're not going to be able to like include them, you know, like you can try to explain them and you can hold them mm-hmm. for yourself, but mm-hmm. the other person will not. Like there's so many things I cannot get mm-hmm. for him, mm-hmm. you know, like even our parents, you know, like I cannot speak to his parents, you know, I don't speak Albanian and they don't speak English. Wow. And like, you know, there's so many pieces that, you know, we live and exist, you know, in a specific dimension that then like leaves parts of ourselves outside of that. Mm-hmm. And it's complicated and it's like not, sometimes you feel like, what the hell am I doing? You know, yeah, it's so much easier if yeah. I was.
But it's not. Because you probably were with exactly. someone from Puerto Rico, yeah, probably like, the same, oh you know, God. You'd be like.
I can even like, I can think when I go to Puerto Rico, I'm like, I'm another person. I'm not from here anymore. Yeah. You know, yeah. like, yeah. yeah.
Well, nothing stays yeah. constant. Yeah. Everything yeah. is.
What about for you, Gomez? Because you have been in relationships mm-hmm. with folks that are POC, mm-hmm. but don't necessarily have an immigrant background or yeah. they come from the Black community. Yeah. yeah.
Or other communities.
Yeah.
I feel like it's something that you said that was very, very important is that intellectual connection. So for me, it's intellect. It is a physical because it has to be chemistry of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also spiritual for me. I think now in older age, that's probably something that I would say that hasn't been as strong in my past relationship, but as, and I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about spiritual mm-hmm, connection mm-hmm. of greater being of a other dimension type of deal. You know, mm-hmm. for me, those three things are so pivotal, and it's so rare to find someone where you find those three things that are present in one person,
mm-hmm.
you know, and oftentimes I've looked for the intellect and that physical or that chemistry connection that I don't even know if it's just chemistry. It's, I don't know.
It's a connection.
It's a connection, right?
Yeah.
But the spiritual, I think, in the past has been a piece that I have really ignored. And I think in older age, I've come to circle back to it because it involves a lot of healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for me, it's a place of reverence that yeah. I feel that that's a place I haven't really explored with a partner
mm-hmm.
or a lover mm-hmm. that I would like to more deeply.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I bet you guys are wondering if I date white people.
Yeah. do you?
Do you? Okay. I have never dated, like, in other words, like, been in a relationship, dated
okay.
a white man. Okay. My first boyfriend, we were together for 7 years. He was half white, half Honduran.
Mm.
And he was my first everything. We met when I was 19. Mm. And the crucial moment of us, like, realizing that we actually, like, kind of hated each other was when I was at Cal and I was really coming into my political identity. Mm. And he really didn't have one. And he came from a really conservative family background. Mm. Well, more so his father, who was like a Republican, and like, you know, it was a very interesting. Mom was from Honduras, but also, you know, highly educated and grew up in San Francisco, class, like, yeah. right? So there was class issues too. Mm. But I think the point of just us not everyone thought we were going to get married. The point of us just not being able to come together was the fact that I was coming into my political awareness as a POC, as a woman of color, and, you know, thinking of wanting to be, you know, in a more progressive leftist sort of, I don't even know if it's leftist anymore, but just like, it's not liberal, but it's leftist sort of politics mm-hmm. and thinking of the world in those terms. And that was really, really hard because we just could not connect.
Mm.
Since then, there hasn't really been, like, there's one dude that we were hanging out with. I met him at this huge wedding in Long Island in New York, and we had this weird friendship because we really didn't date. He's a white guy from, Jewish guy from New York, and Maria has heard about him, and it was like, he wasn't what I would say someone that I could connect with intellectually. Mm. He class-wise, he was a different class. In other words, he was making a lot more money than I ever would, ever probably will. And he had a lot of entitlement and flexibility in his life, which in some ways was really cool for me. But in other ways, I mean, I was in grad school. I was getting my postdoc, and like I had no money, so he would come visit me and say, "Hey, let's go to dinner, let's have fun," you know. But only fun is no fun after a while. I think I need that intellectual sort of connection. So most of the men that I've been in relationships with have been POC, you know, Black or Latino, Afro-Latino, but not white. And I have to be honest, and this is really hard, and I know I need to work on this, is I feel like for me politically, I don't want to date a white man from the United States. And there's something that you said, Gomez, and I mentioned it a long time ago in one of our podcasts here. I don't know if you remember, but you said how two POC, two persons of color walking down the street hand in hand, is an act of radical love. It's revolutionary because so much of society makes us like hate ourselves and like not want to be with each other.
Or just humanize our experience.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah. And so that's, I mean, we've been friends for many, many years, Gomez, and that stayed with me. And I really believe that. And at times I wonder, am I cutting myself off from a really fantastic experience with someone because they're white?
Well, they would have to be incredibly liberated, you know, from their own internal biases. And I think that's really hard for some people.
It's hard for me to get over that.
And it's hard for, yeah, it's hard for, you know, most people of color.
Yeah.
But something you said is really important is class.
Yes.
Because I think of all my relationships, the one thing even beyond race, class, it's class. I dated this woman who was one of the last families that were teleported or helicoptered out of Vietnam.
Wow.
Queer woman. And I just, even though we have a lot of lived experience, the fact that she came from an upper echelon Vietnamese family was just so disconnected from my lived experience growing up working class in the, you know, backyards of steel mills in the south side of Chicago. So I think about that particular thing and I think, yeah, class is huge.
It is.
And then even to this day, I feel my roots are in working class, and I don't know that I can deviate from that because I just, it's a political choice. Even though I probably could make more money, I choose not to because like I feel that there is a path that I'm walking that it's a particular direction. And whoever loves me has to know that that's the path I'm walking and has to walk with me. I shouldn't deviate that path just because this person doesn't agree with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, class and race are two very, just very difficult dynamics to navigate in relationships. Like even with friendships too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, I mean, I know we're talking about dating, but I mean,
friendships are relationships.
They are relationships, but like class, I had I was in a relationship with someone that came from a more affluent class from Puerto Rico, and that it was so difficult. It was so difficult because I, you know, like I would have so much rage actually at the like capacity to, and it was not just like consume, it was like without even thinking, like without like, oh, I just want this. Okay, I'll just go. And like at the time, it just brought up a lot of rage in terms of like that privilege for me that I just, you know, it was so hard.
Yeah.
So hard.
Yeah, I agree. I've had that with friendships and in relationships where class comes into play. And I come from a working class family. I mean, my mom and dad may have what people call middle class values or whatever the hell that is. And my mom did grow up a little differently than my dad did. But we're a working class family and we're really proud of it. My dad was in a union. We went on all his strikes. And so when I explain that to folks that I date, it really just depends on what their worldview is, if they value that or not, you know? And my thing is, if you're going to date me, you need to value it. So that's something. I mean, I think that, you know, those are just some issues that we have. We haven't even, like, I know as Latinx community, as we sit here, we kind of alluded to it in the beginning, but there are definite ideas of what dating should or should not look like mm-hmm. in the Latinx community. Mm. We talked a little bit about the culture, even whether the notion of dating exists, you know, and I think that it is a newer notion. Yeah. And marriage is more of a question, I think, in the past within our communities was because of the entrenched Christianity and colonization, right?
Yeah.
So it's just really interesting to sort of sit back and see as a woman in her early 40s, just like how even just in my lifetime, dating looks differently.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that I would assume that also like our experiences do not represent what other people
agree
how they've been raised around relationships, like in like the big what you know like Latinx is such a big encompassing concept, and like it's just there's so many experiences in in it, you know, that you know definitely. I mean, I remember growing up, my friends really like wanting this desire, like the desire to have like the wedding and like the like also like the princess type of like narrative, right? Like that there's gonna be this man that it's going to be like, you know, like the perfect the
Your
one
prince
right
charming.
Like that one like the prince charming, right?
Yes, I know, I wanted to be the prince charming.
You
want
you are Gomez.
But yeah,
you know,
I know.
But I was also thinking like the whole idea of like the virgin horror dichotomy as well.
Yeah. We're like, oh.
That's so interesting because to me the most sexiest partner that I could have is someone who is sexually liberated. But yet it's also the thing that terrorizes me the most because it challenges my own rigidity, my own concepts of what I feel or not feel comfortable with, right?
That's an excellent point you just made. Rigidity. Because those messages are there.
Oh yeah,
it's like we like intellectually say yeah liberated love and liberated relationships and like liberated sexuality, but then like we have all those like that liberated parts in ourselves,
I mean, I'm always like, I'm a liberated woman, and then you know something might come up and I'm like, I can't do that, you know.
Or
like recently on Facebook, there's been this uproar. Amber Rose has a picture, you know, with her. You can see her pubic hair. It's like she's lying down. And
I love that. I love pubic hair.
It's a great picture. It's fantastic. Show your pubes. Yeah. Who gives a shit? And like, you know, there's still those pieces of me from childhood where it's like, cover yourself. You know, you don't show certain parts of your body. You don't hypersexualize yourself, right? The virgin whore dichotomy.
Yeah.
But it's so liberating, and why shouldn't women be able to, or people, show their body and celebrate it, you know? And the slut shaming that happens, which I also believe it's
messed up. Oh my god!
I can't. So I consciously like I really want to pull away from that because it is a huge way that people are so horrible to each other.
And I think even like women towards other women.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. The whole mean girl sort of dynamic in high school. The slut shaming. Once a young woman is slut shamed, it's really hard to live in her community.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And in some communities, that means death for some
women. Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. And so it's interesting.
O te voy a mandar al Salvador.
Yeah. Te voy a mandar. Voy a llamar a la policía. You know, I hear parents say that to their kids all the time. And so there are some very real dynamics, whether they're from colonization, you know, whatever systems of oppression, gender, patriarchy, they're all interplaying. They're all interconnecting and they come within us so that when I say I'm a liberated woman, I always have to ask myself, but are you?
Yes, yeah.
Or are you on a path towards liberation? Because we don't have to be at the end.
Right. I don't think I'll ever get to the end in all my learning.
I like that because that actually feels liberating to feel that you don't have to be like not liberated or all liberated, because they both feel so constricting,
yes,
right? Like,
right.
You know, like the ideal of like, oh, we're all free. It's like also not, you know, like what? You know, like, because then you lie to yourself about the parts of you that you're still like in that path, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like I don't want to show like or present like this idea of myself that it's not real, that it's not authentic, you know?
Exactly.
And then being in a path feels authentic and actually feels liberating.
But it has to be authentic.
Yeah.
Like, when I mean, I'm going to be real, real. Like, one, some of the struggles that my partner, I hope she doesn't kill me, but... is sexual connection.
Yeah.
And for me, it has to be authentic. I can't fake stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I just can't. I just... There's a point in your life, when you reach a point in your life where you're just like, I ain't going to fake this. Either I feel it or I don't feel it. Either I want to have sex or I don't want to have sex. And there's... It's not that there's not in between, and not that I can't be flexible. It's just that that connection has to be live. That has to be authentic, you know?
Yeah.
And I think we're taught as we're younger to fake it or to whatever.
Yeah, fake the funk, man.
Yeah. So anyway.
Fake the funk. I agree. I mean, there is a whole world of capitalism that's capitalized on the fact that women, and this is the gender that they talk most about, cisgender women, right? Through vaginal intercourse, fake orgasms, you know, and it's usually to please the male person that's in that sort of...
One thing, if you're a male, you don't know your honey's having an orgasm.
Girl!
There's a problem with you.
Girl! All of you men, write in and let us know, if you always know, that do the straight sex thing with a lady.
Come on.
Well, there are men who do not know.
What?
Yeah, I think
absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Or they don't care to know, maybe.
That's perhaps part of it.
A sense of like knowledge of.
Right.
You know, kind of, I don't know.
Right. And then, you know, I think we're not deviating because sex is a part of dating, but also sex doesn't have to be a part of dating. Right? It could just be sex. It's just intercourse.
Yeah,
it can be whatever it is that you want it. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're dating someone.
No.
But inevitably, we're all faced with that other part of the relationship. For some, sex equals intimacy, more intimacy. And then I know others that are like, not to me. Mm. That doesn't necessarily equate intimacy to me. Mm. I could have been having sex with someone and not felt any sort of intimacy with that person. It was more physical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just depends from person to person, I believe, as you get to know yourself on your journey, on your path, right? And certainly always has to be consensual.
Oh, yes.
You know?
Setting place, consent. Yeah, for sure.
Consent, yeah. I don't know if either of you have any little stories or funny anecdotes or anything that, you know, we're coming up on our hour that you wanted to add to our lively conversation today. I loved what both of you said today. I really feel like I learned a lot.
Yeah.
Algo más.
Algo más.
Well, maybe one thing that I was thinking, like you said, when you said now funny stories, but something came to mind. You know, I have not dated much, but I remember one time I met this guy and one of the things that, like, we both lived in the same city in Oakland. I think I told you this story. And then he suggested that we have a Skype date.
Oh, I remember that.
And like,
was it a sexy Skype date?
I have no idea. I think my process of acculturation in that moment, like, just like went like off the roof, because for me that was like the oddest thing that someone can tell me. Because, like,
that is kind of weird.
We're both in Oakland. Like,
why don't you just get together?
Like, I just don't.
Let's meet at a cafe.
And then I also was like not good, I think, at navigating that as well, because I was like, what? No, like, I just couldn't like really understand the whole thing.
Yeah.
But there's something about like person to person contact,
yes,
like that, I feel that it's getting harder and harder, not just with dating, but, you know, overall, I think, like, what you were saying, like, dating is so hard in the Bay Area, that there's something about this, like, virtual world and the text and the apps and all of it that, and I don't want to romanticize, because I cannot speak to this because I really haven't been in part of this like new culture of dating, but there's something about like meeting people mm-hmm. out in the world mm-hmm. that I think it's like a something that's really changed.
Yeah.
And I worry about that, and I also mm-hmm. worry about like what does that say about like culture and individualism mm-hmm. and like all of that, you mm-hmm. know? Yeah.
I just keep thinking like all the ratchetness that happens when you date in the world, like people's, you know, true colors just come out in the weirdest ways. Like right now that you were talking about date, I have dated, I wouldn't say a lot because I have a lot of periods of like hibernation, as all my mm-hmm. friends know, but I have dated, and I remember this one dude, and this is when my friends and I talk about the Mactivists, you know, you're an activist, you're a Mactivist, and like this person, you know, worked for, I don't even think I should say,
it's
like,
so where incestuous, they, too.
Yes, it's so incestuous, and so, all I remember was meeting this person out, and one of my best girlfriends, Elie Denise, is a Puerto Rican and Nicaragüense, and this dude was Puerto Rican and Nicaragüense who loved salsa music and merengue and was from an urban environment and totally seemed normal, you know, and so we make a date to meet up at this, I will not say the place, to go dance with all our friends. And so I get to the place and I'm like dancing with some guy, and then I see him dancing with some woman. I didn't, you know, he told me to be there to go. And so I was like, hi. And then all of a sudden I see these hands reaching for me, and it's the woman that's dancing with him. And she's like, how the fuck do you know this woman? And I was like in total shock. This had never happened to me before. This was a few years back. And I was in total shock. Like I was like, who does that? Who tells a person to meet them somewhere,
some sloppy person.
And then they show up with their wife, you know? Turns out that this was the wife, even though he was trying to... Then this person lied to my best friend who was with me and basically had her convince me to talk to him that very same day because he was saying that that was his soon-to-be ex-wife. And I mean, just people's ratchetness and sort of a lot of their issues, and you know, I'm totally blowing this dude up, but he doesn't listen to this shit anyway either. So like, it's all good. But I'm just saying, like, what we've been talking about today is honesty. I know sometimes it's really hard making any sort of relationship, whether it's, you know, friendship or love interest, but honesty really gets you ahead of the game. Like,
yeah, even when you mess up. And let me tell you, as someone who's like fucked up in relationships, I think that communicating your missteps or your whatever assumptions is that much more important, because you can make those mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you would have said, hey, you know what, I'm in blah blah blah, you would have then had agency to decide whether to do or not to do.
Right.
You know,
instead of almost getting my ass kicked.
Yeah.
For something that I was like, this didn't even happen in high school. What the hell is going on? You know. So I think that, you know, the world of dating, it can offer many, many things. I think our point today was to say, like, it looks very different ways for all kinds of folks. And for us in the Latinx community, it certainly does. And we've all had our own experiences, whether we feel like we've had a lot or not. They're valid and they count. And this is part of us getting some narratives mm-hmm. out there around what it is to date as a POC Latinx.
And creating a space to do so.
Yeah.
Because where do you talk about relationships anymore outside? I remember when I was a kid, I used to listen to, ¿cómo se llama? Not Dear Libby, but what's the other? Dr. Ruth?
Dr. Ruth.
Yeah. That's where I got my sexual education.
Yeah, she
really
was great.
She was
great.
Awesome.
Yeah, she was great. No, absolutely.
Oh, and, but you know, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Because have you read, like, I read also now that Teen Vogue.
Oh, yes. They're really progressive. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, came out with an article
on masturbation.
Masturbation.
Yes, yes. That's awesome.
Huge. Like, that's huge.
That's huge. I totally could have used that. In
I love
school,
masturbation.
School. You know, so to normalize it, right?
Yeah, it's Teen Vogue. You know?
Yeah, it's
like,
amazing.
Well, I'll end with an anecdote. And this is more of a personal anecdote. I hope my sister doesn't kill me, but... Because, you know, we have younger generations coming up, right?
Yeah, we do.
And one of the things that my sister, you know, has said is about her daughter is, I want my daughter to be able to learn how to love herself and please herself so she doesn't need someone else to do it for her. And she doesn't make decisions based out of that lack of experimentation. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's the most beautiful, liberating way in which a mom can look at how sexuality, how your child is developing your sexualness and your sexuality in general, you know?
I think that that's beautiful, what you just said. And I think that the point of Dismantled is for us to sit here and think of how we can dismantle sort of a lot of these constructs that we weren't at the table to construct in the first place, and we're creating our own constructs and making them, you know, digestible and you know, changeable in whatever ways suit us. And I think it's really important because our stories of dating are not out in the media. No, they're not on television. They're not on YouTube. Unless they're telenovelas. Yeah, unless they're soap operas, unless they're filled with drama. But, you know, I think that this is our attempt at bringing some realness to our experiences. And so,
and I think too, like, just, I wanted to also add, like, this, I know we were focusing mostly on dating, but there is not, like, we can't separate dating from like love and sex and like friendships and relationships, right? And like connections. True. And I'm kind of thinking a little bit about remembering of how this podcast sort of got born, and the Latinx episode, and it all started when our you know, crew friends, Marquita and Asia, they did that blackout episode based on, and their theme was liberated love.
Oh, beautiful,
and,
beautiful.
And that was also their first blackout episode.
Yes.
I think so. Yes. Right? Yeah. And so they said, like, this was great. You guys should do it for your Latinx or, and we were like, liberated love. What does that look like? Mm-hmm. It would be so complicated for us. How do we even begin to think about this stuff? And in a way, like, our conversation today feels to me sort of like the beginning of that conversation, you know, what like liberated love would look like, you know, and I am left today with this idea of it really struck a chord with me on like liberation, right? And absolutely. Like, what does that look like? And it's not like this like super rigid place that you reach, but it's kind of like a journey, right? Like it's a constant process of examining, right, and reflecting, and it's not like static. You know, and
absolutely, I agree. Liberation, this is one of our main focus for Dismantled. And so just a reminder, if you have any stories about dating or if you want to talk to us about any topics, please feel free to visit our page on Facebook. It's called Dismantled. And we love, love, love to hear about all of you. I know a lot of my people just come up to me randomly or send me texts or when I see them out. But we really need you to write stuff for us on the Facebook page or on the iTunes page. So if you have something that's burning, please let us know. We welcome all of your thoughts and also topics that you want us to tackle.
Maybe we could continue the conversation on the Facebook page about love. What does love mean to you?
Yeah, what is liberated love? What is our path to liberation look like? Mm-hmm. So please let us know. And so thank you again for listening. And we're going to end with our core words, our commitment to love.
Discourse.
Solidarity.
Liberation.
Liberation. Woo-hoo!
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.